This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. Very Minnesota-centric show today, right? Got Randy Johnson. Used to be at the Center of LA Times, but a long time ago moved out to the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And Mike Grimm, the play-by-play voice of Minnesota football and basketball.
Correct, and T. Frank now.
T. Frank is going to join us on the show as well, so we got a lot going on the show today.
He's right now, Steve.
Oh, I know he is.
Oh, okay.
No. Please allow me as a broadcast professional to set up the show.
Certainly.
If you don't mind, we'll try it my way, see how it goes. All right. So, I mentioned this half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. And T. Frank, we welcome you back. Great to have you with us on the show, as always.
Steve, good to be with you.
All right. So we've talked to you. You break down quarterbacks so well. And I had said in the offseason to groups when I go out to speak to them that Drew Aller was 59.5% last year. If he could get himself to 63 to 65 this year, he'd have a great year. Well, he's 72 plus right now. Why?
Well, that's a great question. The first thing is I think that the offense is presenting him with better opportunities, and he's not having to throw in, hey, Drew, fix this for us sort of situations where run on first down, run on second down, now it's third and five, and it's a more difficult pass. That's just the nuts and bolts of a generalized, probably too grossly generalized statement about his situation last year versus what this offense has done this year. And then you throw into the account that Tyler Warren is an incredibly reliable receiver. So when he's throwing those passes, you know, I apologize. I should have his adjusted completion percentage up, which, you know, eliminates drops and things like that and throwaways. Sure. That's a big part of it. And there are less dead plays in the offense. So he was top five last year in throwaways in terms of the best decision he could make was to kill the play and throw the ball out of the end zone or at the feet of his receiver. There's significantly fewer of those. And I guess the last layer would be he's extending plays much better this year, and James Franklin has given him his praise for being able to do that and to, you know, throw on the run and avoid pressure so that it's not those situations don't present themselves as much. So there, as always with quarterbacks, there's multiple layers to this, but I think generally he's improved and the situation is improved. And the way the offense operates this year gives him better opportunities, which he's then doing more with and able to fix some of those situations around him, you know, unlike last year where there was, you know, some sticking points within the offense.
Another element I want to bring up, you said there are fewer dead plays. How much has it helped them that you have two running backs that have become proficient at catching the ball and maybe taking what could be a dead play and at least getting something out of it?
Yeah, and I think this is another area where he's gotten better is those check downs and just being more accurate on them. I know that watching him in the spring game, even obviously very windy in the spring game, but it was kind of a common theme last year where he would either overthrow one of those check downs or he would throw it a little bit off target, and they haven't gotten as much out of that. With Nick Singleton in particular, his transition as a receiver, not only to catch the ball cleanly and confidently and efficiently, and Steve, you've watched this development over time of Nick when he got to Penn State and Nick what he is now, the ability to address the ball in the air, just in the observations I've had, is night and day. And then what he's able to do with it then once he has the confidence, catch the ball cleanly, and then make plays as a natural athlete in space, that's been a huge development. And Catron has been Catron. He's always been pretty good at it, and he's just refined and gotten better at those things. But I think Drew and Nick together, that development and that combination of getting better there is, you know, is that ability to take a check down and make it a dangerous play to win you a game at the end of that USC game. But I wanted to get your opinion on Nick developing as a receiver. What have you seen? You see more than any of us of that particular process.
Okay. I would say as a freshman when he came in, he was not quite, but pretty close to what I would call a body catcher. So in a body catcher, it's the hands, but they also then like use the body as a third hand to help secure the ball. What you're seeing now is Nick goes out hands in front like a wide receiver. That is the indication to anybody that watches. You know, so if you're somebody that doesn't have a sophisticated eye for the game, you're trying to learn more about the game. If you see a receiver with their hands out, their confidence level's huge because that's how you're supposed to catch it. His hands are out now when he catches the ball. He rarely now uses that body almost like that security blanket to bring it in, and it's made a big difference. So when you're confident, you're already in the process of making the catch, and then you're also in the process of making the cut because you're confident you're going to make the catch. You don't have to wait for it. That's what I see.
Yeah. And the body language, you mentioned the body language. Just when the ball came to him, when I initially watched him, like, he's stiff. Like, I don't want to say it's fear, but it was just an all-out concentration on the football. And now it just looks like he's been doing it for 3 years. And it's just, I've been really impressed with that because, honestly, that's a hard skill to develop. Some guys just don't ever really, you know, make that transition. And some of the things that these guys have done on campus, I've been really impressed, you know, the class of 22 specifically in my mind, of their development on campus has been really impressive, doing hard things and doing it while being on the field. And we all have to watch the development and the warts and all those things happen because a lot of those guys were pressed into service, you know, early as freshmen or as redshirt freshmen.
Let's face it, in high school, he really wasn't going to be called upon to catch the ball a lot. I mean, you know, they ran the ball as a run-centric team. So there's certain things that a running back transitioning from high school to college, there are two areas where they have to really become better at. Number one, they have to become better at catching the ball. And above all, they have to become blockers. And the blocking part, everybody else has been blocking for them. And because they're usually on run-centric teams, they're not having to pass protect. They're the ones that have the ball. Singleton and Allen have both become excellent at pass protection and blitz pickup, and they both are excellent in the pass game. And again, that's part of the development, but also the commitment by the young players themselves to understand that to be a complete player, you have to do it. And I have to give them a lot of credit for thinking that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so now the offensive line part. What have you thought run block, pass block with this team to this point, T?
I have been impressed with Drew Shelton. Start with the good stuff. I've been impressed with Drew Shelton because this offseason he obviously was coming back from a surgery that he had to rehab from and then kind of get his football legs back underneath him. And I just specifically with offensive linemen, I think that's a real challenge because you've got to have your big boy pants on. You've got to have grown man strength to be a difference maker up front. And if you're not in the offseason getting bigger, faster, and stronger, and everybody else is, that is a natural sort of like you're behind the curve a little bit. And he was a little shaky to start the season, but he's really come on and played much better, I think, in the second half of the season, where I kind of just set it and forget it. Like, unless there's an obvious pressure from his side of the offensive line, I generally am like, I know what I'm getting from Drew. I think there's still some areas where he can develop and be more consistent and be more of a difference maker, but he's definitely helping the offensive line in the run blocking game, you know, specifically. Just a couple of games where he kind of, maybe it's a mental lapse or something where he lets a guy off the front side and they are part of the tackle. But generally, I think he's been what they needed him to be as a guy where I think after playing through that injury last season, maybe we collectively had a less sure idea of what he was going to be after playing pretty well as a freshman. Anthony Donko, I again, just kind of go with the tackles. I've been really impressed with his ability to play with basically half a body. You know, like, you know, some of the injuries he sustained, all on from what I can tell, all on the left side of his body, and to go out there and play the way he did in the Ohio State game and to not give up pressures against a good defensive line. Whatever you think of that defensive line, whether you think they're overrated or underrated, they're definitely a very good defensive line. And, you know, pressure wasn't a problem for Penn State outside of one drive where they were able to get a couple up the middle on Drew and get some sacks. So Penn State was able to do what they wanted to and kind of shifted the game plan away from skipping on every single play because of the way Donko was playing, which was a surprise. You know, he didn't start that game. He had to come into that game and you know, played midway through and then finished the game. And he looks like just getting better and better each week. I don't know if he'll be 100% to the guy that was a dominant run blocker at the beginning of the year, but generally I think that's been a stabilizing force in the run game, getting it back towards where it was at the beginning of the year. And then the interior, I think, is the area where if you're talking about the biggest improvement from last season, the scheme has helped them a lot, but they've improved significantly at stopping pressure up the middle on Aller, and that's allowed a lot of the plays he's made, it's easier to evade pressure that's coming from outside the tackle box, you know, tackle or outside, than it is to evade pressure directly in your face. So that's been a really good ecosystem for Drew Aller to operate in. It hasn't been, you know, I haven't seen a game where they have a full breakdown on the offensive line one way or the other. I think this game this weekend is going to be a good test for those guys on the interior, because especially, you know, when you're looking at Dawkins and Wormley, when the talent gets to that highest level, that's when the interior, I think, starts to struggle a little bit in opening up run holes. So this is a good Minnesota team, and I think this is a good test where if they pass this, that is definitely a massive step in the right direction if they can handle this ball game and control it up front.
Yeah. The usage of Warren, I feel like Wallace is helping him. How important would it be to have one of those other wide receivers, one of the other three, just get one more guy? What could one more guy mean in the pass game to go with Warren? Because Wallace, to me, is helping a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually was interested in this, so I looked at some of the advanced numbers on first read targets or, you know, plays where you're involved in the first read. And I didn't want to just be Penn State specific. I wanted to look across, okay, good teams that they're compared to, other, you know, college football playoff teams. How many guys are actually getting real targets where they're in the number one read, whether they're the number one only target on a play or they are part of that first read of if the defender does this, then I throw to one of these two guys. And you're absolutely right. It's the top two. And as far as first read targets, it's much closer than people might think. They design a lot of plays to go to Tyler Warren, and there's no question about that. But in like a drop back progression situation, it's within, I think, seven passes between Trey Wallace and Tyler Warren. But then there's a cliff, and it's all three of the other receivers we've seen this year vying for that third spot, and they've been kind of cycling through game to game. But it has been inconsistent, not only in the type of production because of the type of the receivers they are, but then the threat game to game in situations. You know, if you face a team like Ohio State, not to keep going back to this, but a team that's very physical through the route,
those are the guys
that were struggling the most, and they didn't present
you're
a threat
right.
in that game, which
you
then
right.
means you can just glom on to the other two. And then, you know, in certain situations against zones, I think you can see a lot more of Liam Clifford, who actually is the most consistently explosive of the group in terms of yards per catch and, you know, up the field explosiveness, where you have kind of a designed and tailored passing game around Amari Evans, where they're trying to find a way to get him involved. So get them involved. One of those guys has to do something to present that third target. And I guess the thing I would say is, at this point, I don't know that the way that they're trying to get those guys involved, I'm thinking specifically of like the short passing game and the end arounds to Amari Evans. Right. His struggle is through contact and tackle breaking, yes, and things like that. And getting him shallow depth of target, I understand wanting him to catch and run, but that is a big barrier where he has to break a tackle to make a big play in underneath coverage. And that to me seems like I would lean more into Liam Clifford personally, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
Well, see, Evans, I think as time goes, if he can be more physical with DBs in the process of getting to the route in the ball, it would make a big difference. I mean, without question.
I mean, he has the most talent of those three, and that's no disrespect to any of them. I mean, he runs, you know, in the 4.3s, and he is 6 feet tall. Like, he's the guy you're looking for in the offense to present that third threat of not just being a third receiver, but being a deep threat and having that electric speed. It's just been it's just been this very long road for him in becoming more physical, but also understanding how to be physical, not just the push-offs and things like that, but then playing through contact in a veteran savvy way has been the thing he's tried to learn the last couple of seasons.
Right, you look at defensively the play of Jalen Reed, the ability. You know, it's interesting. You'll see teams where the leading tackler is a safety, right? And you'll say, well, they're getting to the third level, except he plays so often in the box. What has his versatility meant, and what does it mean to a quarterback that he's got to find him every time?
I'd go a little bit further back and say that he is, because he's playing the position that KJ Winston was playing, and he's playing it to a comparable level. And that's really impressive, considering, first off, he wasn't playing that position to begin the year, you know, during camp or in the off season. He was playing the field safety, and he was playing, obviously, the lion position down in the slot near the box. Jalen's been around a long time, but he's never really been the leader in the boundary as far as, like, that guy who's over the box as the apex defender coming down and filling in the run. He has the ability to do it. We know that. They were trying to get him closer to the line of scrimmage, but just doing it from depth and the burst and the athleticism that KJ Winston had to do that versus the way that Jalen Reed does that with good athleticism, elite instincts and the conceptual understanding of how to do these things. I'm just so impressed with his versatility and his ability to just make it right. You know, the defense was not going to be in a good position after losing KJ Winston. And obviously everyone else had to adapt. They had to find those guys to replace him, you know, in that nickel position. But Jalen, he slid over seamlessly into that boundary position to, add in against the run and make those plays and be around the line of scrimmage so that when somebody misses a tackle or there's an open run play, you don't feel like it's going to go for 30. You go, okay, so somebody missed one. This one's over at 6. That is a huge benefit to the defense, considering they lost that very early in the season, and it was unclear whether they're going to get it back, and they have, and it's been a really impressive transition for him.
Yeah, Abdul Carter, we see the sack numbers, we see the tackle for loss numbers. What kind of all-around defensive end or defensive player has he become? Because Jack and I are looking at him, and we see him playing the run as well as anybody right now. And that's something a lot of people aren't talking about.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been impressed and surprised that a guy in his first year playing edge rusher, and I know he's, you know, moonlighted as an edge rusher, you know, on passing downs, and they played a five-man front, so he was doing this a little bit last year. But to go full-time, play that position, and have as complete of a game as he has right now, and honestly, early in the season, was doing a lot of those things, is unbelievably impressive. Also, the number of snaps he's played more snaps than anyone else at the defensive end position. Obviously, denied Dennis Sutton getting hurt is a big part of that. But to gain weight in the offseason, change positions, play the same number of snaps that you did at linebacker, and by the way, be one of the best all-around players on the team. Most people don't do that. Even great athletes don't do all of that in one season. And he's playing at a style of play that is akin to the guys in the NFL that are elite run defenders from his position. J.J. Watt did this thing that has become kind of standard across the NFL where against zones, instead of playing the outside and just waiting there and setting the edge, he would dip inside into the B gap, kind of going rogue against the system. But then, because he was such a great athlete, he would be in the middle of the play. So he was unblockable and ruining the scheme. And like a lot of really good edge rushers in the NFL do this from time to time. Abdul has been able to do that at this level and do it efficiently. There's only been a couple of times on film where he's done that and then, you know, West Virginia ran around him. The ability and the style of play that he's playing with is everything you want from the defensive end. I think this game this weekend is going to be a really great test because some of the he's feasted, as he should, on some of the weaker opponents over the last couple of weeks. This is going to be a good tackle with length and with movement skills to see how far he's come by using his hands and the things that he's really started to do over the last month or so. I want to see it against a comparable talent. Nobody has the same athleticism as Abdul, but if he has the ability to get home and get multiple sacks, tackles for loss this weekend, I mean, that signals he's made that transition into a bona fide superstar on every level, not just the athleticism and the splash plays, but as a player overall.
I love talking breakdown with you. You're so good at it. T, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Great stuff. I mean, when we're done with segments, people know more about the game. Thank you so much.
As always, Steve, glad to be here.
Yeah, all right, this half hour brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The holidays are filled with traditions. Why not start a new one this year by getting up to an additional $1,000 off a new Kia? It's the Kia Season of New Traditions sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia. Hurry in to Sunbury Motors Kia for exceptional holiday deals on all the popular Kias. And get up to $1,000 additional off on select models. 2024 Kia Sorentos have 0% financing for 48 months and start as low as $28,495. 2025 Sorentos have 1.9% for 60 months. And there's 16 to choose from. 2025 Kia Sportages have 1.9% financing for 60 months and start under 30 grand with 24 on the lot. And there's 21 2024 and 2025 all-wheel drive Kia Tellurides starting at just $39,995. Celebrate the holidays during the Kia Season of New Traditions sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf. For details, see dealer or go to Kia.com.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Probably hope I turn that on, huh? Great to have you with us on the show today in this half hour. Well, as we get to Randy Johnson in just a few moments. Half hour being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. We have a multitude of insurance needs. They handle them all, make sure you're fully insured, and above all, also try to do everything they can to save you money. That's what the great people do. That's what people who believe in customer service do, and that is Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. An old friend joins us, Randy Johnson. Randy, how have you been?
Oh, pretty good, Steve. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you.
Home week here for me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, all the Center Daily Times days, which I know you cherish because you work with so many great people there. I mean, like, really great people. I was some staff you had at the CDT.
Yeah, Ron Bracken, got to know him real well. John Severance, Terry Hess, Doug McDonald. Yeah, a lot of good people there.
Great people. All right, this Minnesota football team, P.J. Fleck, at one point had them on a four-game winning streak. What have been the common threads to their wins so far this season?
You know, a lot of it has it just they were doing things. They're winning the key moments, and they very much were protecting the football too. They lost to Rutgers. They had a late turnover that really cost them, and then they didn't protect the quarterback nearly as well. Didn't run the ball real well, but during their win streak, yeah, they were you know keeping it third and manageable on offense. The quarterback Max Brosmer, the graduate transfer from New Hampshire, was very, very accurate during that stretch, you know, completing just short of 75% of his passes and, you know, spreading the ball around. You know, his winning touchdown at UCLA basically was his fifth read in the progression and mm-hmm. got Darius Taylor running back out of the backfield for wide open for a touchdown. So you know, they've become a lot more of a passing team this year than they have in the past, and a lot of it has to do with the play of Max Brosmer.
But it also has helped that, you know, Jack Hammond, I have always felt that Jackson, the wideout, we always liked him. We thought he was a really good player. How important has he been to Brosmer this season?
He's been huge. You know, he's the go-to guy. Took him a little bit to get going in the season. He didn't have a touchdown catch through the first few games, but he's made some just spectacular catches this year. He's a guy that he'll probably get a look on Sundays next year.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. He also thought watching the Rutgers game, he threw a lot to Gears, the tight end.
Yeah,
he would not have been the starter at the beginning of the year. Why has he developed so well?
He's just a good sized body, and he's able to get open. He's been on the same page with Max quite a bit too. It's kind of an interesting story. When Max came here after New Hampshire, he took all of his skill position players down to his home in Georgia. Parents' home in Georgia, and basically had a week of bonding and drills and stuff at his local high school, and I think that's paid off pretty well this season. You know, he's done a really good job of getting a lot of different receivers, and including Darius Taylor on the backfield involved in the passing game.
In the transfer portal, you have time to evaluate a guy because you're seeing them against, for the most part, comparable talent. So Cam Ward goes from Washington State down to Miami. Comparable talent. Right? Florida State missed. I mean, everybody watched DJ's entire career at Clemson and at Oregon State, and it's not there. And they still took him. What did they see in Max Brosmer at New Hampshire that made them think he could be this kind of quarterback at this level?
I think a lot of it was the accuracy, and I think too it's that they can't shop at the big high price stores in transfer portal situations. You know, they're limited a bit in their NIL. It's gotten better, but you know they couldn't go spend $1 million on a quarterback like some schools were able to do. So they got a bargain, and they were looking for somebody who would be the leader, and he came in right away, and he joined the team for drills and things during their bowl preparation, you know, just get to know everybody. And, you know, he basically, you know, from the start, he won everybody over. You know, it helps, too, that, you know, he's working with the quarterback coach and offense coordinator, Greg Harbaugh, who, you know, they've really been on the same page. It's almost like he's almost like he's a co-coach in a way.
Okay. Does the offensive coordinator know that?
No, it's a really good relationship. They all get a lot of give and take between the two.
Yeah. When you talk to him about when he was at New Hampshire, what was that experience like, and what does he think now?
Oh, he's very happy to be here, and he had a lot of support from the coaching staff at New Hampshire when he decided to move up. You know, they were you know, they hated to see him go, but they were very, very encouraging of him, and you know, helped out you know with their evaluation with the Minnesota's coaches and everything. So I think he's really enjoyed his time here. It's pretty much everything he expected it to be, and you know, he's been able to put together a really nice season. I'm sure he wants to see what he can do at the next level, and I think playing up in the Big Ten after playing in at the FCS level, I think he's probably feels pretty good about what he's put on tape this year.
I'll get to back to a couple of guys on offense in a moment, but on defense, I feel like there's a guy that can make plays on each level, Joyner, Lindenberg, and then the freshman. Tell us about Coy Parrish as a high school player, and then tell us why he's made this transition the way he has to being a college player.
Yeah, Coy is he's a really good story. He's from a small town up by Duluth called Esco. So he's playing against pretty, smaller level players and everything. But he was dominant, And PJ Fleck and his staff, they were recruiting him hard from the start. And there was a game last year. He had a pick six, and he's going down the sideline. And PJ Fleck and a couple of the assistants were there watching the game. He flashes in the peace sign as he's going in the end zone. So he's kind of got pretty gregarious personality. Ohio State was after him big time. Ryan Day flew up to Esco on the last weekend before signing day and was had a hard push. But Coy just decided to stay in Minnesota, and he can't. I don't think he just regrets his decision at all. He's he didn't early enroll. He wanted to try to win a state championship in basketball or track, and that didn't happen. But he got in June and pretty much hit the ground running, and you could tell he could be a difference maker just with his athleticism. When they beat USC here, he had the game-sealing interception mm-hmm. in the end zone, and
yep.
basically the fans stormed the field, and he's riding high on top of some fans' shoulders. So I think he's feeling pretty good about where he's decided to go to school.
What did it mean to not just Minnesota to keep a guy at home, but what did it also mean to the fans in the state that a talent like that stayed home?
Yeah, that's very it's very important. The state can be pretty provincial about their athletes. They really like to support Minnesota people, and a lot of times over the years the top recruits in the state didn't always stay here. It's gotten better under PJ Fleck. He's kept more and more of them over the years, but in the past, a guy like James Laurinaitis went from YZ to Minnesota to Ohio State. You've had people go to Notre Dame. Quinn Carroll, a guard on the team this year, started at Notre Dame and came back. So it's not always easy to keep the kids in state, because if they're looking, a lot of times they'll be looking at a bigger name program like an Ohio State, a Notre Dame, a USC. So it's tough to keep them, but they've done a good job of developing the ones they have kept.
Yeah. What about Joyner off the edge and Lindenberg, the inside linebacker? What have they meant to give Minnesota some balance at all three levels?
Yeah, that's been a huge deal, especially Lindenberg. He was banged up last year from the start. He had a bad hamstring injury in training camp, and it basically kind of lingered, and he ended up getting a knee, I think, later in the year. So he missed a lot of games. I think he only played in four or five, and their defense suffered big time there. He's their leader. He's a leading tackler. He just kind of sets the tone. So he's a pretty quick guy. He can go sideline to sideline. So he's been this year it's been back to normal for their defense, which had been pretty good under Joe Rossi in most years. Now, Rossi left to take the Michigan State defense coordinator job, and they got Corey Heatherman from Rutgers in here, who's done a nice job this year, too. And then Ja Joyner, he gives them the pass rush. He's got moves, got a really good first step, and pretty relentless, too.
This team has 20 takeaways this season. They are plus 12 giveaway takeaway, Randy. When they have had the takeaways, what have you seen? And conversely, when they have not had games with takeaways, what have you seen?
Yeah, basically the takeaways that they've fed off that really well in their wins. Basically playing the complementary football, where the defense will get a takeaway and the offense will usually score right away on it. they've had them at opportune times too. You know, just they've a couple game sealing interceptions by Coy Parrish. A couple game changers. Justin Wally had a pick six against Maryland to set the tone there. Things like that. They've done really well. Haven't had the turnovers. They tend to commit one themselves. They had a bad turnover at Rutgers deep in their own end that led to Rutgers go ahead touchdown. They had a fumble against Michigan that led to a Wolverine score that in a game that turned out that they had a chance to win in the end. So they've done a good job for the most part. But if a key to their winning is getting those turnovers.
Darius Taylor, I thought he had a chance to be a 1,200 to 1,500-yard rusher this year. I know Brosmer's presence maybe has cut into that. What have you seen pro and con in it? Because obviously as a pro, he's caught 45 balls. He's important in the pass game. But what have you seen
role,
pro and con in it?
His role changed a lot. And I think, with bringing in Brosmer, they were going to pass more. I'm surprised that it is as much as it has been. They haven't been as good of a rushing team this year. The offensive line just hasn't clicked as well, but Taylor's still been very effective in getting yards. It just so happens that it's through the air a little bit more. He was banged up at Rutgers, so that was a tough game for him. Just didn't have the push. I think the bye week will help immensely against Penn State this weekend.
Spencer, the other wideout, came in as a transfer. Brockington's played against Penn State before, and then there's Christian Driver, who transferred from Penn State. What's your thoughts on those three opposite Jackson?
Yeah, they've all had their moments. You know, you haven't, especially Spencer. You know, he's solidified that role very well. He came here last year, didn't really see the field nearly as much as he has this year, but he's really developed well. Kind of supplanted the. Taking playing time away from Brockington a bit, and Driver's been in and out of the lineup. You know, he's had some moments, but he's just hasn't been able to supplant anybody in front of him yet. So, but he's developing. I think they like what they have in him.
Randy, what's been the thought process about having the bye week this late in the season?
I think they're pretty happy with the way it fell this year, the both bye weeks. They basically had their first one was after the UCLA game and before Maryland, so they played really well after that when they came back to play Maryland, beat them 48-23. This one fell well mainly because they've been kind of a banged up team the last few weeks. That they had two road games in a row at Illinois and Rutgers, won one of them, lost the other, and now they finish with the Penn State, and then they go to Wisconsin on Black Friday. So I think having that little rest is going to help them quite a bit.
Randy, how the fans reacted to all this and to this football team this season? I know that Penn State's a big name coming in. I understand that, but how have they reacted overall to this team?
Overall, it's been pretty good. I mean, they've had good crowds all year. They've done a nice job of getting it close to full, if not full, for some of these games. People early on when they lost to North Carolina in the opener game, they probably should have won. They had missed a couple field goals that would have won. They lost 19-17. They lost back-to-back to Iowa and Michigan, and there's some grumbling about, then it was just like, okay, what kind of year we they're going to have here just because they had USC coming to town next week. But when they upset USC at the time and they were ranked, so that got the fans back on board quite a bit. The field storming game after that, and they carried that momentum up to UCLA, which they had a really nice showing of fans that went out there, about 15,000 in the Rose Bowl. And they probably, a little bit of luster lost last time out when they lost to Rutgers. Probably it doesn't have the shine in this matchup as it would if they would have had a five-game winning streak going in. But, people are, they know that Penn State's obviously a favorite, but, they're optimistic that the Gophers can, put up a decent fight.
All right. What do you think of the new Big Ten? Now, Minnesota's in the middle of this. They don't have the length of travel of Washington, Oregon, USC, UCLA, Penn State, Rutgers, Maryland. They don't have the length of travel because they're in the middle. But what have you thought in seeing this play out east to west and a 1 through 18?
Yeah, you know, it's what I've seen is it's like every team has a stretch in their schedule that's going to be pretty tough. And it's how you navigate that three-game stretch. And you know, you've seen some teams, you know, you've seen like right now Nebraska's on a five-game skid. Wisconsin's on a four-game skid, I believe it is. So basically, you have some, you know, you could get some spots where you're loaded up against a couple really good teams. Like Wisconsin played Oregon tough, but it was still Oregon, and the Ducks found a way to win that game. You know, so it's you might be like probably your record might be maybe a one more loss than you might have had last year, that type of thing. It's a challenging conference now with those four teams from out west in there.
How did you think it might work? How curious were you as to what would be the pluses and what would be the pitfalls? And in your opinion, what's been greater, pitfalls or pluses?
Well, I would say the pluses have been greater. I think it kind of, you know, just the new blood kind of re-energized things, you know, and especially with Oregon, you know, they came in and right now are, you know, they've clinched their spot in the Big Ten title game already, and you know they're a serious contender. I think you couple that with the playoff expanding to 12 teams, so now you see a team like an Indiana that has jumped up, and they have a very good chance to make it into the playoff. Remind me a little bit of the Gophers in 19 when they upset Penn State to get to 9-0. They finished they had lost a couple at the end, but when they got to 9-0, they were right in the mix. Had it been a 12-team playoff back then, and if it expands to 16, you'll see teams like that pop up and have a chance. Maybe teams that you know aren't year in and year out power, but they put together a good season every once in a while. The one thing I don't like as much is there are divisions. If you lose a couple of games, you can fall out of the title hunt pretty quick. Then you're ended up just mainly playing for bowl positioning, you know, to get to six wins or more.
Yeah, I agree with that. Randy, absolute pleasure. Really looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. Thanks so much.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
I talked to like Mark Brennan. I know he'll be here. So a lot of good old people from State College. Looking forward to seeing.
It's old home week, buddy.
Yeah.
Thanks, Randy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good one, Steve.
Randy Johnson, who at one point in his career wrote for the Center Daily Times, and he went out and he wrote, I think, for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Now he's with a Minneapolis paper, and it's he does great work, has for a long time. Found a home out there, and in finding a home out there, continues to do great work, and he's been covering Minnesota football, basketball, and everything else in between out there for a long time. So it's great to have him on. We're going to have Mike Grimm on the show as well, my golf partner. Each of the last 2 years, Mike and I, you know, there's 2 days of golf 1 year, 2 days of golf the next year. So of the four, we were paired together twice. All right, I'm talking about same cart, the whole thing. One of the greatest guys going. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They'll take care of all your insurance needs because customer service means everything to them, which means they go the extra mile to save you money as well. At Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com and News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.